Hello again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show where you never know what's going to happen or who you're going to hear. The murder rate in New York City is up 9% this year. Homicide is up 20% in Chicago. That's just two of the more than 35 major U.S. cities that have reported significant upticks in violence this year. But why is the murder rate on the rise? Is it drugs? Is it guns? The prison system? Is it because of the increased scrutiny on police following the deaths of Michael Brown and others? Law enforcement experts say no one reason is to blame, and no one is claiming to know for sure. But we have with us today Professor Sean Bushway, and he's going to tell us the truth of the whole thing. He comes to us from the University of Albany's School of Criminal Justice and its Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy. Professor, you've been at now full-time at Rockefeller, right? Is that right?
Okay. Yes, that's correct.
And he's an associate editor of the Journal of the Royal Statistical Society, Series A, and the Journal of Quantitative Criminology. We want to hear from you. What do you think is the cause of the rising murder rates, and what do we do about it? 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Sean, it's great to see you back. Last time you were on is about 5 years ago.
That's correct.
And it's good of you to come back. Did we do something the last time that has caused your alienation?
I figured maybe I didn't do a good enough job.
Or
the distance was too far since we're like two blocks away.
On the contrary. Okay, so whoever wants to get on the phone with us now and tell us why. I have a theory.
What's your theory?
You'll tell me I'm wrong, but I'll try it on you anyway. It's drugs. It's always been drugs.
Well, that's an interesting theory. I think the way to start, though, is to recognize, and the first question I had is, okay, this is happening in New York City, it's happening in Chicago, it's happening in Milwaukee. Right. Is it happening here? And so I looked up the numbers, and as far as we can tell from the numbers that have up until June of this year, it isn't happening here. There has been no evidence of an increase in violent crime or murder in Albany, Troy, or Schenectady during the same time period. If there's good news in a sense, whatever's happening hasn't reached Albany yet, if it is in fact drugs. And drugs is not an unreasonable hypothesis. The last time there was a spike in the murder rate, the overall consensus after many years of study was that it was in fact due to the crack epidemic and the violence among young, primarily minority men who got access to guns during the mid-80s. And in those cases, it happened in the big cities first and then moved into the smaller cities as crack moved its way from the major population centers and into the smaller places. So it's possible that it's drugs. However, at this point, the evidence is simply not at all clear on that. There isn't a crack epidemic in the same way. It's possible heroin has become more virulent and a more active drug than it has been in the past. There's more concern about heroin, for example.
Well, but heroin could be the answer, couldn't it?
I mean, the issue wouldn't be heroin. It would be the heroin dealers around heroin. the question is, crack was people used to talk about, you're old enough to remember the crack epidemic in the 80s.
I'm old enough to remember the end of World War II.
Yeah, well, and so then clearly you can remember the mid-80s.
Not so fast.
and we had situations where, people used to describe it as if crack hit a city, a bomb went off. Foster child placements in New York City went up, 50% in 1 year due to the increased use of crack by women in inner city communities. We don't see that same level of epidemic. And then the other thing that happened at the same time in the crack market is that the fundamental way in which drugs were sold changed. So not only did we have a different kind of drug, we had a different change in market.
What was that change?
Well, it was much more open air. And much more competition.
People selling out in the
yeah. So the crack markets were very open markets, and it's typically markets that are like OxyContin and other drugs that are sort of more white collar drugs. Powder cocaine are typically not sold in open air markets, and those are much less violent places. So open air markets tend to be violent.
Somebody's a drive through, somebody sees a competitor, they shoot them.
Yeah, you're competing for open space, whereas you're not going to compete for a bar or other places that you sell.
Okay, assuming that you're right and that it's not crack, but I say it's heroin, which we know is now the convenient and cheap drug, then what is it? That's the question, Professor. What is it?
Well, it's one of those the murder rates and crime rates, but particularly murder rates, are exceptionally hard to predict. And one of the things that we had to learn about crime trends, and I'm on a National Academy of Sciences roundtable on crime trends, we spent a lot of time talking about what causes the crime drop, what causes crime increases, and the biggest thing is that this is very this is unlike a lot of other trends that we see, like the business cycle or unemployment or changes in health. It tends to go up and down in ways that are hard to predict and hard to understand. So afterwards, you can say, well, maybe it was a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but while it's happening, it's very hard to tell.
Wait a second. You're the expert. That's why you're sitting there. And the question to you is, if you don't know, who does?
Yeah, so I'm the expert, and what I can tell you in my expert opinion is crime is one of those things, particularly homicide, that it's very hard to understand what's happening at any given time. Because fundamentally, the things that causes the change this year, it's different than the thing that causes the change 5 years ago. It's not a stable pattern. Whereas the business cycle is kind of the same basic phenomenon over and over again. That's okay. Not true about homicide. So if it's heroin, heroin's a very different thing than crack. It has a different... It's a different kind of drug. One's a stimulant, one's a sedative. They're very different. And so I think the problem is that you need a different explanation every time out, and that makes it very hard to predict.
Okay. So now we're going to go to Les in Delmar. Okay, Les, you're on.
Yeah, the comment of 90% increase across the country, I'd like to ask his opinion, because where there's a public health model, the actual death rate and injury rate has gone down specifically from gun violence. So the 90% represents an increase overall, but where there are programs of the preventive medicine approach, the actual thing is a decrease. Would you like to comment? I'm referring specifically to prevent violence, the program of communicable disease model, which is done in Albany, Westchester, New York City, Chicago. Those pockets are really going down, and other parts of the country. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm not sure the number isn't 90% in terms of an increase. For example, in New York City, I think Alan said it was a 9% increase.
Yeah.
In Chicago, the increase is, I believe, in the order of 30%.
In Law and Order, Wisconsin, it's over 20, I believe.
Yeah,
but again, in the pockets where these things were taking place with the preventive model, the prevent violence is being masked by the overall increase, but they're actually being in a decrease.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I... There is some research that talks about, you know, as trauma centers and others get better, it's possible that what's happening when you see the change in the murder rate, you're not getting a decrease in the number of shootings, you're just getting a decrease in the number of people that are dying because you have better treatment. I don't have a strong opinion about that, but I don't think that that's an over. I mean, that's possible. But the evidence I've seen on that is that it's not overly compelling as an explanation. Those things haven't. In other words, you can't explain the drop in the murder rate by simply saying that we have better treatment for gunshot wounds than we used to.
I'm not referring to better treatment, sir. I'm referring to better indication of going into the emergency department and stopping the person from coming back and doing a revenge killing. With shooting, which has been shown to be the communicable disease.
Okay, very quickly.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think I know what you're talking about now. I wasn't completely clear what you were talking about before. So there is this new trend to try to create prediction models about who's, in a very specific way, who's going to be the next murder victim. And you're right, it's occurring in Chicago and other places. I mean, I will point out, though, that Chicago has experienced a substantial increase in the murder rate. So it's possible that if they hadn't been doing this, it would be even higher. But, of course, that's hard to tell.
Okay, we got to go, Les. Thank you very much for your very good call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I want your calls. I want you to argue with the professor. My view is it's all drugs. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition LLC Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. Rogers Book Barn, Hillsdale, New York, a bookstore on a country road with 30,000 used books and classical CDs. Open 11 to 5 Thursday to Monday, RogersBookBarn.com. AMT Precision Manufacturing, proud supporters of Saratoga Plan and their work to conserve the 166-acre Pitney Farm in Saratoga Springs. SaratogaPlan.org. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, 800-342-3661. And SPAC, presenting the Saratoga Wine and Food Festival and Concours d'Elegance, September 11th through 13th, featuring the Adirondack Tour Friday, tasting with chefs Saturday, and jazz brunch on Sunday. SPAC.org.
one 800 348 2551. We're very lucky today. We have with us Professor Sean Bushway. He comes to us from the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy, used to be professor at the School of Criminal Justice, full-time at the Rockefeller College, and they're lucky to have him. Professor, we'll take some more calls, if it's okay with you. Here we go to Laura in Woodstock. Laura, let's hear from you.
Alan, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an opinion that it's possibly an open murder. Why can't everyone? You know, so I think it creates an atmosphere of, like, today there's more killings every day. It's just like we're desensitized, and I think it feeds itself, that negativity and that thought that, yeah, anyone can get away with it.
So I have two responses. One is, I mean, there is a body of thought in criminology and in criminal justice that talks about how social environments and the culture, for lack of a better phrase, can affect crime. So that in environments where there's heavy amount of social control and amount of community feeling and commitment to the community, you'll tend to have less crime than in places where there's more stress on the individual, or less community bonding, or less community control, or less strain, or more strain, I should say. So, I mean, there is some compelling evidence that as some societies become more developed and more control at the centralized level, that in fact crime goes down. So, you know, that it isn't unreasonable at that level. What you're also talking about, though, but I would say the only thing I would say on that is that the overall trend with respect to social control and those kinds of things is that has been increasing, that we have more social control, more buy-in to the community than we ever had before. And so people generally use that explanation to describe the crime drop rather than any short-term increase in crime.
Laura, one second. I wanted to add something to that. Commissioner Bratton, as we speak this very morning in New York City, announced that crime has gone down in New York City. Murder is up by a couple of percent, but crime has gone down, which would, I think, substantiate the professor's contention here. So what do you say? I'm sorry, Laura. Go ahead now.
Oh, let's see if I can remember what I was going to say.
Well,
what do you consider social control?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, there's more social control because there's more laws. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so more laws, but also the way in which people spend their time tends to be less in less public place. But there's more cameras around. There's just think about what happened after the bombing in Boston. How many cameras there were there? There's just much.
And you're saying that creates more crime?
My point is that the to the extent to which that argument has been used to describe crime, it's used to describe what's been a. Remember, we're in the midst of a fairly long decline, fairly steep and sustained decrease in crime. For example, in New York State, statewide,
yes.
There's been a 16% drop in all index crimes since 2005. So, you know, we're in a period of what we're trying to explain in general typically has been a crime drop. And he's right that in New York City, the crime is, except for homicides, crime is generally going down. And so one of the explanations for that is that there is, in fact, more social control, et cetera. But I think what you're talking about is what's sometimes called the Ferguson effect, which is as a result of there is a lot of anger and heat and riots and other things around some of the police shootings that have occurred.
Yes.
And that's creating an overall sense of lawlessness. It's also creating, there's a built-up sense of anger. And the last thing is that it's possibly leading, what people are most talking about is the fact that police may be policing less. So in some of the cities that that are most affected, not only has the crime rate dropped, the number of arrests has dropped dramatically as well. So there's a 50% drop in the number of arrests in Baltimore. And you hear a police officer saying, I'm not going to arrest someone if it's going to, you know, I might go to prison. And so there's a sense in which there may be a pulling back on the part of the police, at which point there's an increased lawlessness.
Well, I think there needs to be less arrests, especially for frivolous things like traffic violations and everything else. I mean, my goodness, look at the people, that string of women that died in jail, and some of them were just for simple traffic violations. Yeah, I think we do need less arrests, and we need less incarceration in this country, too. I mean, you know, if your choices are you're going to be incarcerated or, I mean, I don't know. I just think we have young, especially younger people have so much less choices in some ways.
Okay,
and,
Laura from Woodstock, we got a whole bunch of people, probably thanks to you.
All right, thank you, Alan.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We got one free phone. 1-800-348-2551. We have the expert with us, Sean Bushway, professor, who has studied this stuff. It's just fascinating to think about why this is happening. Crime seems down and murder seems up. Professor, let me ask you this. If you take a look at our newspapers these days, and I know this, I'm going out on a limb here, but newspapers are suffering precipitous declines in the number of people who are working for them. But I notice from a number of newspapers that crime stories lead in a way that they never did before, that it's murder, murder, murder on top of things. So the perception that Laura announced of lawlessness may be increased just because...
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is there in fact more crime prevalence than there was before in the newspaper? And I don't know the answer to that. I do know that... there's actually been some studies, and I've done a little bit of it, looking at the actual occurrence or the presence of stories about murder in particular and its prevalence in the newspaper versus its actual prevalence in society. And one of the things you find is that there is higher than you would expect coverage of exceptional crimes, crimes against women, particularly dramatic crimes.
Murder.
Particularly murders. But so in other words, the things that get covered the most are the things that are rarest.
Well,
so
wait a second. Now, if you're in Berkshire County, where I live, over in western Massachusetts, and you've got two or three reporters on your newspaper and somebody gets murdered, that's going to be a big story.
Well, I mean, I think there is, right, because murder in Berkshire County is pretty rare. But I'm just saying, in general, it's not particularly rare in New York City. But what kinds of crimes get covered in, what kind of homicides get covered in the New York Times? And those are the ones that are more exceptional. And things, and what you find is that if the society in large is basing their opinion about what's going on in society based on the newspaper, you'd have a skewed perception. You could think there's a lot more deaths from airline accidents than there are, and you would think that a lot more white women get murdered than they actually do.
Okay, so we've got a Richard in Schenectady. Richard, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hey.
Now, I was curious here. Is most of the increase in murder that's happening, is it interracial? Is that statistic available?
Actually, most murders in the United States are intraracial.
Okay.
So within the same race,
white.
Yeah. So it's white on white, black on black. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's substantial. It's in the vast majority.
Okay. Well, one of my main ideas is one of the reasons for this, I think, is the power of suggestion. As more and more stories about these types of crimes are broadcast in the various types of media, the more people seem to think that certain violent acts are possible expressions of their anger towards something, whether it's legitimate or something in a different area. Not that they're legitimate expressions, but nevertheless, they hear about it and they think, well, other people are doing that. This is a kind of a subconscious thing, and my evidence is three things here. With the school shootings, for example, starting with Columbine, that was the first one you heard of something like that happening. Then you start hearing others taking place after that, and it got to be kind of high. I don't know what the total number
okay,
was.
There's one. There are five people on the phone. Go ahead. Give us two now, Richard.
At the post office shootings back in the 80s and 90s, uh-huh. And then now lately the theater shootings. You know, one person does it, other people think, oh, there's an idea. You know, as I say, it's more subconscious than conscious.
Okay, there we go, Professor.
Yeah, I think that there is some concern that there are copycats. And so, for example, what I would say now is that you're hearing more about sort of gangland-style executions of police officers.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's possible that that's a backlash against some of the more prominent incidences involving police shootings. And when the first guy did it in New York City, the next guy does it. That may, in fact, be what's happening. It's often the case, though, that it's more perception if the media starts picking it up and starts paying attention to it. All of a sudden, you think that this is happening a lot. So, you know, if I asked you, for example, if you think a lot of kids get abducted and murdered, and if that's more than it used to be, your answer probably is going to be yes. And the actual reality is it's been going down for years. So, again, we're back to the difference between what you perceive in the media and what's actually happening. And it's a little hard to disentangle those two phenomena.
A point I was trying to make a few minutes ago. Richard, we got so many people on the line. We thank you for calling. Okay, we'll go to Ann in Clinton. Okay, Ann, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much.
Sure.
My comment is about the celebration of violence in our culture. It seems that everywhere we look, there's violence. Every movie, every TV show, TV commercials, everybody has a gun. So it's always good guys versus bad guys, but it seems that we worship violence more and more. So I think that the culture follows suit.
Doctor?
Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, I think the problem I have in terms of explaining that is in over the last 20 years, violence has actually decreased dramatically. When you're talking about homicides, homicide rates are at 30-40 year lows. And so, overall, you'd have to argue, if you believe that theory of crime generation, then you'd have to believe that our culture has been celebrating violence less. And then cultures don't change quickly. So the question is, if you have a sudden increase, it's hard to blame it on culture. Cultures are Titanics. They're not sports cars. They don't turn real quick. And what we're talking about in places like Milwaukee and New Orleans and Chicago are fairly dramatic, quick changes in the murder rates that are unlikely to be explained by changes in culture.
Could they be explained by, one gang decides that their turf has been invaded, so they knock some people off, and then the other gang comes back and does two more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that goes to your explanation. The two things I hear when I was doing a little bit of research for this that you see the police chiefs talking about are your drug story. Like, what's changed in the drug markets? Is there a new cartel coming up from Mexico that's trying to take over turf, something like that? Or are gangs not necessarily involved in drugs sort of going at each other at a higher rate? And a lot of murders in places like, as you know, in New Orleans and Chicago are gang related. So it's at least possible. But those two things don't have to be exactly the same.
And thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, so I wanted to ask you this. The question then is this. If you get a permissivist mayor of New York City, for example, or a permissivist mayor, maybe somebody who's a liberal mayor in Albany, will that make a difference in the crime rate?
Well, so the way it would affect is if, for example, as you probably know, I mean, the cops, the police officers in New York City were not happy with the
furious. Mayor. Yeah. Turn their backs on them.
Okay. Furious is a good word. And so you could imagine, and right after that occurred, right, all the cops went to double up. So there were fewer individual officers on the street. So there was a decrease in the arrest rate, although it hasn't been a sustained drop. So it is possible that, for example, arrest rates can decline in response to the lack of support, the perceived lack of support by police officers. The problem is the relationship between arrest and crime, and that relationship is not as obvious as you think. In other words, typically arrests go up when crime goes up, and so it's a little hard to say. I don't think we know definitively that more arrests lead to less crime. So it's a little tough to necessarily tie that, although I think most people now believe that police and the kinds of things that police do does affect crime. But it's not as easy as to say, well, if they stop arresting, they decrease their arrest rate because they're having a blue flu or something, it's all of a sudden going to lead to an increase in crime. It's not quite that straightforward.
Okay. So let's go to Kyle in Colony. Kyle, you're on.
I think you may have just answered my question, but I was going to ask you, Alan, to kind of clarify your statement about crime being down in New York City and whether or not you felt there was any correlation to the changes to stop and frisk.
Well, yes, that's a very good question. Doctor?
Yeah, so that's an interesting example, right? So stop and frisk, as far as I understand it, has been largely stopped in New York City, and yet the crime rates have not gone up. So a reasonable conclusion would be, maybe stop and frisk didn't work. However, you know, where we are now in terms of the crime and the crime generation process is a different place than we were when crime stop and frisk started. So you can't necessarily say because the crime didn't go up that stop and frisk didn't make it go down. But the reality is when stop and frisk stopped, we did not see a crime wave. And again, that gets back to the degree to which we have a tight relationship between what the police do and crime.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye. We have a couple of emails here. How much of the increase is due to domestic violence? Do we know that?
I don't. I actually have some of the numbers right in front of me. I don't have that number right in front of me, so I don't know. I mean, there were some claims in some of the material that I read preparing for this that the crimes were in fact more. The increase was primarily concentrated between people that know each other, which doesn't necessarily mean domestic violence, but is partly. And you know, you'll be surprised. Maybe you'll be surprised, but the majority of murders do in fact occur between two people that know each other. And so, you know, it's possible that that's happening. But again, I would have to say that the overall long-term pattern has been for a rather dramatic decline in the number of people being murdered by domestic partners. So domestic violence in terms of homicides have been going down for years.
Bonnie writes, it's a little long, so as we have five people on the phone. The phrase gun control is linguistically a two-edged sword. To those who have never owned or held a gun, it seems reasonable on its face. To a law-abiding gun owner having passed all current required checks, it comes across as an outright challenge to their already established ownership. And then it goes on and on. You want to make a general comment about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that often people have observed, if you compare the United States to other places, is that we're a lot like other places with one exception, and that's violence, and primarily gun-related violence. And so, in other words, if you sort of want to distill the difference between us and Europe, it's the fact we have a lot more gun deaths. That's because we have a lot more guns. And so on a very basic level, it's not unreasonable to say that the reason why we have more murders, which tend to be very efficient when you use a gun, is because we have a lot more guns. Now, what you do about it in this current situation, though, is not clear, right? I mean, so, you know, do you arm more people? Does that help? And the evidence on that is pretty ambiguous in my view, that, you know, concealed weapons and things may not lead to an increase in crime, but I don't think it leads to a decrease either. So, you know, I think that it's a question of we are in an environment where there's a lot more guns than in almost every other place in the developed world. And it's not unreasonable to conclude on the basis of that that's at least part of the reason why we have a higher murder rate than most places.
And we are now going to go to Pierre in Westfield. Okay, Pierre, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering about this claim that it's about drugs. Isn't it more about the business of drugs than the drugs themselves?
I think that's what I was saying earlier, that it's about the drug markets, and you'd have to show me there's some evidence that drug markets are have changed or there's been increased conflict in the drug markets. So, yeah, I think I'd agree with your statement.
So we've heard from one person who thought that there was a Mexican upsurge in Mexican gangs compared to the old Colombian gangs, and this is exactly the kind of thing you're talking about.
Wouldn't one way to counteract this be to legalize drugs and then take the profit motive out of all of it? And you could regulate it and tax it and use the taxes to help the people that can't deal with
it. Okay, we got it very quickly.
I mean, I think that we're going to get to see if that works, right, in California and Washington and Colorado. And I think the jury's still out whether we have less crime and less illegal marketing. Because what's happening is you have to remember in places that where, for example, marijuana is legal, it's still the case that there is thriving illegal drug markets in marijuana, and that now it's actually harder to figure out who the bad guys are because there's a lot of legitimate folks out there. So it's not clear that having a legal market necessarily leads to the eradication of the illegal one.
Pierre, we got to take a break. Thanks for the call. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, their religious school, cultural programs, and more. SaratogaSinai.org. And Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, offering We Plan, You Plant design service in addition to tree and shrub installation, privacy hedges, perennial gardens, and lawns featuring a selection of nursery stock on site. Whitney'sFarm.com.
And we are here with Professor Sean Bushway, quite an expert on the whole business of crime. So let's go now to Tom in Albany. Tom in Albany, you're on.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Two things very quickly, just so people are aware. I just got out of a doctor's appointment, and CNN is showing in a waiting room. We just had a police officer killed in one of the Chicago suburbs, and it's wall-to-wall news about his shooting. So we're going to go through that painful experience again. On to what my question was asking about. I've owned guns since I was literally 5 years old, and I'm a licensed firearm instructor and teach basic safety classes and a class that enables you to get a concealed carry or an unrestricted permit in parts of New York. It's very hard to listen to the various numbers and know whether they are correct but taken out of context or incorrect. And the prime example of that is we know that since 1993 that murders have gone down consistently in the U.S., the crime rate's gone down, and the number of guns has grown exponentially. So you could infer that the additional guns have led to a decrease in crime, and that's a bad logic jump. How, as a professor, do you go and figure out whether the numbers that are getting thrown around, one, are accurate, and two, are presented in the proper context?
Tom, let me there's so many people behind you. We want to make sure that everybody gets a chance. Okay, Tom, go ahead.
That's right, I'm off.
So that's actually, you've just put your finger on it. I mean, I think that it's far easier to tell stories about why there are increases and decreases in crime than there are, than it is to actually prove it one way or the other statistically, simply because oftentimes, you know, if you think about it, we're going to talk about crime in the entire United States. Well, we have only a few observations on that. So we don't get to study it like we would a drug or otherwise in an experiment. So it's often very hard to definitively identify what's causing things. And so your numbers you gave us are correct, and it's one of the things people bring up when talking about the relationship between guns and crime.
But you said earlier that we have so many guns, and we therefore have...
I mean, the biggest difference... I mean, the issue here is that if you compare us to most European countries, our crime rates are otherwise very similar with one exception, homicides. And it's homicides that are involved with guns. And we have a lot more guns in the United States than any other developed country. And so that it's not proof, but it's certainly not an unreasonable argument that has been made by many that the problem is due to guns.
Lawrence in Glenville. Lawrence, you're on.
Hi. I'd like to start with a premise that comes from DoSomething.org, and it says that 75% of the crime is committed by dropouts, and that there are 2,000 high schools in the country that are dropout factories. Schenectady High, according to the Daily Gazette, had 270 dropouts in 2012. That they were quoting the New York State report card. And it's also expensive when these dropouts commit crimes. According to Councilman Ed Kosher, he said it costs $300,000 to incarcerate one youth. So the question for fighting crime, I think, would be the question is how we stop dropouts.
Okay. Is that a comment or is it a question?
It's a comment, and I'd like to give five suggestions for parents and listeners to fight the dropout problem.
Okay, we'll have one on dropouts, Lawrence, but not today because we have everybody lined up to talk about the murder rate. And I think you've made the central point that dropouts are dead. If you write me a note at alan@wamc.org, we'll set it up, okay?
Okay,
thank
great.
You. Bye.
Thanks so much, yep. Alan. Bye-bye.
Yep. And let's go to Taylor in Kingston. Taylor, you're on.
Hi. I had a question also regarding or dealing with the education system. I was wondering if the speaker could correlate not only after school dropouts, but after school programs, sports, and, you know, choir, band, tech, all these extracurricular activities that are being dropped for students in schooling. And a lot of these kids don't end up dropping out, but it doesn't give them anything to do in the afternoon, doesn't empower them, and doesn't get any insight. I was just wondering if the speaker could comment on just his thoughts on education and why we're going
okay.
away from it.
Okay, Taylor. We got it. Sean?
Sure. The reality is, it's true that most people in prison are, in fact, high school dropouts. The problem is that when you actually study the relationship between dropouts and crime, it doesn't appear that the crime goes up after the person dropped out. The person is already involved in crime prior to the dropout. In terms of the after-school programs, largely ineffective is the overall conclusion of the research I've seen. It's just often very, very difficult to get the individuals that you want to target here, the people that are disassociated from school, the people that are sort of heavily involved in delinquent activities into those programs. So oftentimes what you do is you create these programs, and then the folks that are in them aren't the people that need them.
Yeah.
And so it's reasonable, but the problem is it's very difficult to reach this particular group of folks once they've gotten that far. And then if you try to have a broader program that affects lots of people, that's extremely expensive and not very targeted.
But the hypothesis that's being advanced here is an interesting one, I think, which is that as people lose hope in the society, they're more likely to commit serious crime.
That's right. I mean, but the problem is, I think that, you know, one of the things you can predict, it's hard to predict the increases in homicide rates, but you can predict high school dropout by grades,
sure,
and other activities in eighth grade. So, you know, you already have a pretty good idea who's going to drop out by what you see in eighth grade. And that's a suggestion that this isn't anything, that this is a more deep-rooted phenomenon that started at a very early age rather than something that's caused by whatever's happening at 15 when they finally drop out.
Interesting. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go to Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Okay, Kerry, you're on.
Hi. Watching old gangster movies, it always seems like the mafia, their hits were sanctioned hits that were pretty much business-related. And then today with these street gangs, the Bloods and the Crips and so forth like that, are they the same, or are they just knocking someone off because somebody stiffed somebody out of $50 or they're going out with somebody's girlfriend?
I actually don't know the answer to that question, but it's a really good question because there's a lot of thought that organized crime can have both an exacerbating as well as a tempering effect on murder. If you control the murder, you know, if you have a highly organized gang structure like what was going on in Chicago, they don't want a lot of violence because then the heat comes down. And
right,
some of the thought is that some of the gangs got broken up a little bit and they lost control. And then it became, you know, about the girlfriends. And so you actually, what you saw, and the same thing happened, you know, in Mexico. We all hear about the violence in Mexico. At one point, there was one cartel in Mexico, and they kind of kept a finger on a lot of the crime and the homicides. And when we partly contributed to the breakup of that cartel, we ended up with a lot of competing organizations, and there was a lot less control over that violence. And so I think the issue about organized crime in particular is, given its current realization in the United States, is really important. I don't know exactly how to explain that within the current context.
Kerry, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll go to Bill in Gloversville. Bill, you're on.
I agree with Alan. I think the murder rate is directly related to drugs and the proliferation of weapons. You can look at Colombia, Mexico, and the U.S., and the drug consumption thereof, and find that the murder rate in this country is higher than any other country other than maybe Mexico and Colombia, and it's directly related to guns and drugs. And the reason why marijuana is still illicitly being sold is because they sell it for half the price that the legal dealers of marijuana are selling.
Okay, interesting, Bill. I want to get to everybody. Sean?
So, yeah, and that's right. I mean, so the problem is if you don't have a higher price on legal marijuana, then you can't reap all the gains that you're trying to have in terms of better services or using tax money. So oftentimes the argument is we'll legalize marijuana and we'll tax it and get some money back into the taverns instead of using money to back into our pockets rather than spending money to police it. But the problem is that you can't do that unless you raise the price. And if you raise the price too high, just like with cigarettes in New York State, then you create an illegal market for cigarettes. And so there are limits to how high you can have a price without creating illegal markets.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. We can get a few more in here. 1-800-348-2551. Let's see. Well, we got okay. That's done. Let's go to Larry. All right, Larry, you're on.
Good afternoon. Earlier, a gentleman called and suggested possibly that legalizing drugs would eliminate a degree of the criminal element. And the professor didn't give a definitive response to that. I want to point out that we did have a great experiment in this country with prohibition. And prohibition made the mafia. Once alcohol was illegal, the mafia stepped in and made tremendous amounts of money and expanded their operation. After prohibition ended, the mafia moved into other areas because it was now legal to sell alcohol. And I remember I was a youngster when prohibition was eliminated. So the evidence, if anything, indicates that legalizing drugs and then competing with in the price, which would be less expensive than putting all these people in jail, et cetera, might be the best way to handle it.
Larry, we got it. Thank you very much. Professor?
2 points. One is that there is evidence to suggest that there was a dramatic drop in homicides, what you're referring to, in 1934 after prohibition ended. I think it was 34.
35,
okay. And there is evidence that that is not causally related to prohibition. A lot of people have studied that, economic historians. I think your larger point is an interesting one. I think the overwhelming evidence is that if you dramatically drop the price of any drug, including marijuana, you will get a rapid increase in consumption. And then, I would, as a counter to your story, I'd ask you what the most serious drug in the United States is, and it's not marijuana, and it's not heroin, and it's not cocaine, it's alcohol. It's the most dangerous, causes the most problems, and it's also the cheapest. And so I think that, the cheaper the drug gets, the more people are going to use it, and more problems that will be created, particularly among heavy users.
Would you advocate then making alcohol illegal?
I'm just pointing out that there are market responses in both directions.
Okay, Larry, you've had yours. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go now to Kevin in Saugerties. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. Very interesting show here. I called in because I'm a forensic psychiatrist, and I cover the Mid-Hudson region. And since I'm the only fish in this pond, I get every case. I usually get 2 to 4 murder cases a year. I've had 15 in the last year. And the only thing that I can find that's common to all of those cases is that the murder occurred in a personal relationship. So a family member, a work colleague, someone they're acquainted with socially. Nothing else is the same, and frankly, only one of them was drug-related. So
what accounts? What accounts for the? What accounts for the rise? In other words,
I wish I knew. The person who screened me for calling in, asked me the same question, of course. And I said, jokingly, global warming, but I have no idea.
Interesting. What puts pressure on
it? Never happened before. I've been doing this for 35 years.
Wow.
And there's definitely a substantial rise in my area, but nothing that connects even some of them together.
Yeah. Kevin, I want you to write me a note at Alan, A-L-A-N, at WAMC.org, and I'd love to get you on the show at some point. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
I mean, you'll feel good in the article in the New York Times that was today. The captain from the St. Louis the Police Department talks about this phenomenon and exactly what you just described, and he's talking about it. It's more about they don't think it's drugs in St. Louis. They think it's this interpersonal conflict.
Thanks a lot.
Wow. You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Alan in Middletown. Okay, Alan, you're on.
Hey there. How's it going? Amongst all this talk, I've not heard one word about economics and the personal economics between couples, personal economics between friends, and how so many people are struggling to get by and not having enough money to get by. You know, that's one of the greatest pressures on a lot of people these days are the economics.
Which, by the way, would substantiate our last caller, the forensic psychiatrist, who said that this often was interpersonal. You've made the same point, Sean.
So my background's economics, and most of what I've done early in my career was on the economics of crime. And so I've written a number of papers. We're looking at the relationship between unemployment and crime, and the business cycle in crime, recessions, and things. The problem you have is that the crime rate, actually including murders, went down during the Great Recession. And so, you know, it's possible there's been a buildup that's somehow coming to breaking loose at this point. But, you know, the relationship's not as strong with murder as it is with sort of property crime. And the fact is, this last time was the greatest recession we've had since the Great Depression. And across the board, crime dropped. And so the economics, the role of economics in crime has really been puzzling to a lot of people, including me, who's been one of the people that talk about that a lot in the field.
Okay, Alan, thank you very much. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you have one sentence before we have to go. What's your sentence?
I was just about to mention about the same thing about economics.
Okay. That's a good sentence, Jim. Thank you.
I did it from real life experience. I can tell you that I live not too far from where they were in St. Louis, Ferguson. I lived in a small town called Floristown. Same thing. Now, when I was there, okay, unemployment was around 12-15% for blacks. So it was probably about 20%. Okay, and it got worse. Economics has a real strong doing in these inner city neighborhoods.
Okay, so stated, and we're out of time. Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate it. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those left on the line. I'd also like to thank Professor Sean Bushway for joining us today. Sean, you did great. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
The support for Vox Pop comes from Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com, and De Blasis, chamber music series presenting music from Manchester Quartet, Sunday, September 27th, 2 p.m. at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York, De Blasis, chambermusic.org, and Cohen's Auctions, accepting consignments of jewelry, fine art, historic firearms, American Indian art, historic items, and more. Coans, COWANS.com for appointments. And Laurie Ilvesacker, Caldwell Banker, Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new, 845-901-6129. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.